Drew question here, right?
That is a very interesting question. Dave O'Brien with the Chronicle Telegram joins us right now to answer that and many more questions on the local beat. Brought to you by Vandermark Jewelers. Stop on by and see Jim and Bob and the whole gang at Vandermark Jewelers on Broad Street here in Elyria, right across from the hospital, a trusted name in jewelry. And if you stop by, you'll see why. Dave, can you confirm or deny what Rocco just mentioned?
Just call me Dangerous Dave Danger O'Brien.
Ooh, Danger is indeed his middle name, and you will address him as Dangerous Dave before anything else. So I like the way you did that, Dangerous Dave. So let's rock and roll here, a cornucopia of topics to get into. And I want to begin with something that you and Dylan Reynolds put together a couple of days ago. You know, a couple weeks back, Governor DeWine had announced his plans on proposed police reform. And for some police departments across the state of Ohio, it's going to take some serious reworking. But as you and Dylan found out in putting this piece together, seems like that's not going to be very tough for a lot of local police departments here in Lorain County, because many of them already have put this all together. You spoke to a lot of people along the way putting this together. What exactly is it that they said?
So we have to jump in the Wayback Machine and go back about about 5.5 years ago to December 2014. Former Governor John Kasich put together what was called the Ohio Task Force on Community Police Relations. Now this kind of created what's called the Community Police Advisory Board, and basically what that does is he got together a bunch of different people, experts, you know, from law enforcement, the legal community, community activists, business community, and all up and down the line, from those different industries and organizations, to basically say, hey, what's the best practices here? What's good that we can put in place, have minimum state standards for policing? So you get things like use of force policy, use of deadly force. When can you do that? Should you have a written policy? What are, how does that work? Minority or diversity hiring, recruitment, is your police force 100% white, or does it more accurately reflect your community, and the separation of everybody in your community and in percentages, that kind of thing. So there was a lot that went into this, and there's also stuff about body cameras, when you can and cannot, start a high-speed chase, that sort of thing. So, real basically, that's what happened a couple years ago. Now, a lot of these standards, local Lorain County Police Departments and the Lorain County Sheriff's Office have all kind of signed on, and not all of them, I should say, but a majority. I think it was only four out of the 15 law enforcement agencies, in Lorain County, are not signed on, and that would give you. I believe that's at Kipton, LaGrange, Wellington, and South Amherst. Now, all, kind of smaller departments, all sort of in the, southern, middle tier to southern half of the county. But the rest of the police departments, Amherst, Avon Lake, Avon, Elyria, Grafton, Lorain, North Ridgeville, Oberlin, Sheffield Lake, and Sheffield Village have all signed on. And I think Vermilion's in there as well, but, obviously that straddles both, Lorain and Erie counties. They've all signed on, with these collaborative standards. Now, we talked to, Avon Police Chief, Richard Bosley, who's the vice president of the Lorain County Chiefs Association. He basically said that, what's good about this is they come up with policies that are best practices, like I said, and then you maintain a level of certification to ensure that every year as you go, you're not altering or you are improving those particular standards. So they kind of keep tabs on you. You don't get necessarily anything out of this other than kind of credit, as well as, maybe potentially down the line some funding or availability of grants. But just to say that, hey, look, you're in lockstep with exactly what the state needs to be doing. Lorain County Sheriff, has already recertified for the year. The sheriff's office is already recertified for the year. One department that's not in the collaborative right now is Wellington, as I said before. And Chief Tim Barfield basically said, you know, we have our own standards, you know, can't speak for other departments, but whether we have the time and personnel to track and kind of document this and whether we can do that accreditation, you know, he had a lieutenant retire who got replaced, you know, and so it kind of depends. Some of these smaller departments might not be able to have the time, the money, or very simply, you know, the staffing in order to meet these requirements, especially when you have to sit down and do a lot of paperwork.
So I think it's interesting going through all of that, Dave, because when a lot of these protests and some of these gatherings, and in Lorain County we didn't really experience this, but in the greater Cleveland area there were some riots. You know, you didn't hear a whole lot of the violence going on, if any, here in Lorain County, and I thought that was fascinating. But going through all the information in your article, Dave, that kind of led me to believe that, you know, this is why you didn't see any violence here in Lorain County when there were protests and demonstrations going on, because a lot of the police departments in Lorain County have already got these rules in place, and it made so that when things got a little bit tense, they were ready for that.
And it's interesting you should mention that, because Governor DeWine now, who was Attorney General, you know, back when Governor Kasich was in office, you know, he has talked about maybe it's time to update with some additional standards for, you know, riot control or riot response. You know, when do you send out the, you know, the officers in riot gear with the long batons, and when do you use pepper spray, and when, if ever, do you use tear gas? You know, that kind of thing. He's talked kind of in real broad strokes about maybe it's time that we update our standards to reflect, you know, when is the appropriate time to do these sorts of things. You know, here in Lorain County, I think everybody was, you know, and I think it went, you know, I think it went across the nation as well, maybe not viral, so to speak, but you had the Lorain Police Department marching with demonstrators, you know, officers laying down on their stomachs, a la, you know, what happened to George Floyd in Minneapolis back in May. You know, you had police officers in, you know, Avon and Avon Lake and other places in the county, you know, meeting with people and saying, hey, are you planning to demonstrate? And we knocked down a bunch of rumors about what, you know, whether demonstrations and protests were going to take place. You know, there were times when it was reported that they would happen, and it turned out that it was, you know, four or five people on a street corner, or in some, you know, in neighboring areas, you know, somebody was walking down the street with a sign that said Black Lives Matter, and the police said, hey, what's going on? Are you doing a protest? And it's like, no, it's just for me. And they had a conversation with the person, and, you know, and maybe took a couple photos and just kind of listened to each other and figured out what was going on. So I think Lorain County has, I think there's a couple police departments here, as our reporting has shown. You know, myself and other reporters at the Chronicle Telegram, we've seen, you know, the way that police engage with their community. And I think that you'll find that the departments that don't do that well are the ones that are going to have a little bit more trouble. Now, that's, you know, I don't mean for that to sound too much of an opinion, but Lorain seemed relatively, you know, the demonstrations were peaceful. There was marching, there was chanting, there were signs, but nobody got punched, nobody got gassed, nobody got pepper sprayed. You know, I think that was one way in which the department really engaged with the people it's sworn to protect. You know, I think that's one of those best practices that you see out there.
Dave O'Brien with the Chronicle Telegram joining us on the Local Beat, brought to you by Vandermark Jewelers. Dave, we're going to shift gears here just a little bit. I want to talk about a former employee at the Grafton Correctional Institution that has filed a lawsuit against the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections. What are some of the details involved here? What was this all about?
So this is an interesting case. Basically, what happened was several years ago, and I apologize if I'm misstating her name, but it was Tyann Washington had been hired by the Grafton Correctional Institution down in Grafton as a corrections officer back in June 2017. During her initial interview, she had said, "Hey, I have epilepsy. You know, that's a seizure disorder. It's under control with medication, but please don't assign me to the third shift because the medication I take makes me drowsy. Also, you know, can you promise that I won't be mandated to work overtime so that I don't become drowsy when I do have to take that medication. She said, you know, for the first couple months working at the prison, that disability was accommodated under the Americans with Disabilities Act. But then just before, I think it was on August 30th or just, you know, September 1st, 2017, the prison sort of changed its mind and said, you know, you can't be skipped in the overtime rotation. You have to work mandatory overtime. You have to work third shift, you know, at some point. And they said, hey, you have to talk to the state prison officials down in Columbus in order to be granted special accommodation. So she said that, you know, or her lawsuit said, which is filed in federal court, basically that the prison, you know, prison officials dropped the ball on this, that her paperwork was not sent down to Columbus, and, you know, she should have been accommodated as is your right under federal law, you know, to make reasonable accommodation for people to be able to do their job if they have some sort of chronic illness or walk with a cane or a crutch, you know, but they can otherwise do the work. Ms. Washington filed her lawsuit, and that's going to make its way through federal court. Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections had no comment, you know, on pending litigation, which is pretty much their policy. But it's one of these things where, you know, Ms. Washington is asking for money, $75,000 minimum, you know, as compensatory and punitive damages, as well as additional training, the removal or demotion of anybody who, you know, any of her supervisors who were discriminating, harassing, or retaliating against her. You know, she ended up, basically losing her job over this, and says that was wrong.
Well, Dave, we're going to shift gears one more time here before we get into our scanner stories of the week. But over the last few weeks here, you've been covering the Lorain County commissioners and talking about how they have interacted with a lot of mayors in the area to talk about how they're kind of handling things, not only with the pandemic, but also with the social unrest as well. Well, Lorain County Community College President Marsha Ballinger was able to get in on the action as well, president of LCCC. She spoke with the commissioners last week, and what were some of the things that she went over?
Yeah, so this is a nice little, you know, kind of brightener. Dr. Ballinger went before the commissioners, and obviously they're doing all their meetings by video these days. But she said that, you know, it was incredible in her mind how, you know, LCCC was able to move 1,000 course sections almost entirely online within a week of the campus closing due to the coronavirus. That was a pretty impressive response. You know, fortunately it was, spring break was going on at the time, so there was a little more time for faculty and staff to kind of adjust before the students were supposed to return. They provided technology, you know, Wi-Fi hotspots, laptop computers, for online and distance learning. The Commodore cupboard, which is a really interesting, neat little story, up there. There's a lot of students at LC who are, who might be food insecure because they're working several jobs and going to school, or they have, they have children, they're single parents. So Second Harvest and the Commodore Cupboard partnered to be able to provide meals and groceries for students, provided basically 62,000 meals to almost 7,000 people in 2,000 households. A lot of numbers there to digest, but the cupboard saw a 35% increase in clients, which is pretty incredible. You know, people just needing a little extra food assistance. There was only 3% of LC students withdrew from the college during the spring semester, which is less than the normal number, and probably some of those as a result of the virus, you know, not being able to be on campus and amongst everybody, especially if you have like a really heavy, like laboratory, you know, workload, if you're in one of the sciences. But they're basically trying to prep and prepare, and took a bunch of personal protective equipment, masks and gloves and gowns that they were going to use in their labs, and donated those to local hospitals. So, LCCC has been, kind of right there in the middle of all of this, pandemic response. And Dr. Ballinger shared a lot of that with the commissioners. Some really interesting things to see. And they're on their way to granting 10,000 degrees or certificates, within the next 5 years. They're well on their way, more than a third of the way there. And are looking to restart, campus life real responsibly this summer and into the fall. Just so that the virus doesn't spread, around campus and get taken back into people's homes.
lots of great news coming out of Lorain County Community College. You know, in the pandemic, sometimes it forces us to make some interesting decisions, and decisions that sometimes are for the best. And with LCCC, it's been nothing but good news, it seems, over the last few months. All right, Dave, we'll wrap up with our scanner stories of the week. What kinds of things did you see and hear on that scanner this past week?
Speaking of bad decisions, Bull, we're going to go Dateline Parma. Male standing outside of the Dollar General, eyes glossy, unable to balance, currently sitting on the sidewalk with his hands shaking, trying to light a cigarette with two lighters.
Oh, boy, there's a joke there about being lit up, but I'm going to go ahead and leave that one alone. I think that's way too easy. That was low-hanging fruit for the pun game, but I'm just going to go ahead and leave that one alone.
Might have been a certain kind of substance in that cigarette as well if we're dealing with glossy eyes. Oh, no.
Uh-huh.
Not
I think
you
can make your own assumptions there, but you know, again, we'll just leave that up to the listeners out there. You decide what you want. You assume what you want to assume. Dave, we always appreciate the time, my friend. Always appreciate the insight as well, and we look forward to doing this again next week.
Hey, good talking with you guys, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, Dave. Again, that's Dave O'Brien with the Chronicle Telegram stopping by on the local beat, brought to you by Vandermark Jewelers. Stop by and see Jim and Bob and the entire gang at Vandermark Jewelers. They're on Broad Street here in Elyria, right across from the hospital. Vandermark Jewelers is a trusted name in jewelry, and if you stop by, you'll see why. We need to get to